Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by 8 Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
What's going on, everybody? This is Pat the Talking Bearskin Rug, and we've got two special interviews for you this month. Let's kick it off with our first. Brian got to sit down with Ryan Brown, creator of Blast Furnace and God Hates Astronauts, which is coming to Image Comics as an ongoing series starting in September. Check it out.
Welcome to Flame On. My name is Brian. I am here with our very special guest, Ryan Brown. How you do?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So it's funny. Well, I guess we'll save the little personal story of how we got to this point. But Ryan, for those of you who have not yet seen or heard, is the creator of writer and illustrator. I don't know, whatever, penciler, whatever term you you like to use.
Drawer.
Yeah. Friend.
So, master storyteller.
Cartoonist. Please.
Sure.
Master cartoonist behind God Hates Astronauts. Now, if you have not seen this, you missed out on this great Kickstarter effort done, what was about a year and a half ago?
Yeah, it was March to April of last year.
So that was very successful. Lots of fans got their hands on your original graphic novel creation that is God Hates Astronauts. And it was so successful that not only did you meet your Kickstarter goal and ship all the books out to everybody, but Image decided to bring you on for a full series. So I'm thrilled.
Yeah, me too. It's weird. I spent years doing this book with no publisher and no one really caring. I did it as a webcomic for a long time. And it found its audience somehow. And then that, was able to prove it to Image that it was worth jumping on board. So it's a dream come true, actually. It's pretty amazing.
Now, we've been trying to set this interview up, I think, since we first met in 2012. Was like 3 years ago, Heroes Con. And it was you and Nick Patara and a couple other guys that we were all kind of hanging out. And you and your lovely now wife, Carrie, were so awesome and so much fun that I think it was really hanging out with you guys at the bar at Heroes like that made that whole convention, because that was the first time I had really been to a convention like that and actually like went to the hang spot and actually hung out with pretty much whoever was there. And if you've never gone to these conventions and hung out at like the host hotel, any number of creators, if you're into the media celebrity thing, whatever. But I mean, comic book professionals are hanging out, talking shop, having a good time. And that was my experience in 2012, hanging out with you guys. And I'm so glad that, like I said, we finally got you. We lined up our schedules just right. I first encountered you then and read God Hates Astronaut, some of the stuff online, I believe, right after that.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually you had something prior with the and I'm always going to mess this one up too. Burning Furnace. No, damn it.
I keep wanting
to call it Burning Crusade because I think that's a WoW reference.
Uh-huh.
But it's totally close to that, right?
It's called Blast Furnace.
That's it. God, you know, it's terrible because I own it. I actually gave a friend of mine a copy, and he just went crazy for it. But yeah, so Blast Furnace caught actually I think my attention before God Hates Astronauts because both if you're not familiar with them, is Blast Furnace still out there on the interwebs?
Yeah, at blastfurnacecomic.com you can read it, and then I've got like print copies that I sell at shows and on my Etsy store. But Blast Furnace was an improv comic that I was doing because I got the job drawing a book called Smoke and Mirrors for IDW, and I had to stop working on God Hates Astronauts because God Hates Astronauts was a webcomic at the time. So Blast Furnace was an improv comic where I wrote and drew a page in an hour, and I did it Monday through Friday for 6 months. And then I just had a webcomic that was updating every, 5 days a week for 6 months. And so it forced me to kind of work fast and get more confident in my storytelling and my writing and my inking. And, some of the drawings are actually okay, despite the time constraints. It's a weird thing. It kind of has its own little following. And it's definitely a smaller following than God Hates Astronauts, but I think Blast Furnace might at times is actually a better book, which is kind of weird to say.
Well, it does have a very stream of consciousness sort of feeling where you'll see the story going one way and then suddenly now we're somewhere else, something else is going on, characters are doing things that are just somewhat inexplicable, but then, they work. It's just that it kind of takes a right and a left turn, in times you don't expect. But I really enjoyed that first, and some of the kind of crazy uses of animals jumped out at me during that book that then in God Hates Astronauts you continue to use and have so many different either, walking – my favorite, of course, walking bears, owl-headed creatures, horse-headed, of course. Just pretty much every animal you can think of. Do you like drawing animals? Is that like one of your favorite things to do?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm basically – I grew up a big Ninja Turtles fan, so I'm basically just drawing Ninja Turtles characters that don't exist. It's like everybody just has a human body, but an animal forehead or an animal head for their head. It's really a lot of fun. Like, I really enjoy drawing human anatomy, like almost every comic book artist. I grew up trying to draw superheroes and learning how to draw strong, physically strong men and women. And, I also love drawing animals. And so that's just kind of where it becomes this combination. And it's also funny to me because people have like a preconceived notion about what an animal means personality wise. What a cow would be like or what a turtle would be like. And it kind of informs their personality a little bit. Like if I drew a character that was like a cheetah, then you would feel like it was kind of being like, quick and deceptive and, that kind of thing. So we always attach kind of personalities to animals. So it's fun to from a character design aspect to have those preconceived ideas about what an animal personality is mixed with the character, and it makes it easier to write, and it makes it it's fun.
I mean, it's very vibrant. I mean, this is the thing about God Hates Astronauts particularly. When you guys see this on your shelves here, probably after this comes out by maybe like a month, because I think they're on the shelves in September.
September 3rd. So okay. We are less than a month away.
So basically, and when you listen to this, and they'll hear this relatively soon when we're recording, please make sure that your comic store owner is going to be getting these, because if he's not, then you're going to have to go on to Image's website and get them online, because they're just, you know, you're going to love it. But the art is so dynamic. It's so unlike pretty much anything else that I've read. If we had to compare it to anything, and this sort of makes sense, I guess in your sort of sensibility and well, certainly in your art style, because you've done art for Manhattan Projects.
Mm-hmm.
You did what, three issues now?
Four issues. I did three Oppenheimer parts that existed in his head, which was the Oppenheimer Civil War, where he fought against himself in a dreamscape. And then I did a standalone story basically about Laika, the space dog, and it's was in issue 21.
That issue particularly amused me, because I know obviously you haven't read your other stuff. You know, the love of drawing animals, and in that issue, that one off, you get to do a lot of fun things with different alien characters, and you know, even Laika sort of has a transformation where she become he or she, I don't remember if it was a
it's a she. Yeah.
She becomes more like your other kind of like anthropomorphic, or I guess that's the right term. No, that's not even the right term.
It is. Yeah, okay. That's right. Yeah.
So it was very humorous to me, and it's a great issue. If you're not reading If you're not reading Manhattan Projects, you really owe it to yourself to not only enjoy the amazing Nick Pitara art, because he's a beast too, but Hickman's sensibility and your art style really married pretty well. The Oppenheimer Civil War is just so ridiculous, but yet so your sensibility. And I love that he even, and I don't know, this is actually a question. In one of the issues, I think one of the Oppenheimers, probably the blue one, like chops a horse head. Mm-hmm. And that, like right there, I'm like, oh, well, that's like Starfighter. You know, he has that half horse head.
Yeah.
So is that you, or is that Hickman saying, hey, work that in?
That's Hickman. I think, well, I got the job based on God Hates Astronauts. And that's how I met Nick. He was a fan of the book, and he kind of bullied Hickman into hiring me to be the fill-in artist. And then Hickman, subsequently had read it. And so, you know, he put a horse into the book because he, you know, kind of played to my strengths. And, our collaboration is pretty organic on that book. Hickman does kind of only on that book. Hickman kind of does like an outline, almost Marvel style,
mm-hmm.
and it leaves it very open to interpretation. Especially with something like the Oppenheimer Civil War that was in a dreamscape, I just was kind of given free rein to make up what I wanted to. And then when Hickman actually wrote his dialogue for it, he incorporated things that I would make up, give them meaning. And make them, you know, more, you know, give it more depth than just a bunch of stupid jokes. So yeah, it's a really, I mean, it was awesome working with him, because it was just like, you know, it was truly a collaborative effort, and he and Nick do a truly collaborative book, and that's why it's so good, and that's why it's so fun. You know, they have very different personalities and very different sensibilities, and they play off each other really well.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of the curious books as far as like Hickman's catalog of stuff, because it's unlike everything else he has.
Yeah, and that's because I think it's the only book that he does it on that he doesn't write full scripts, because he knows that Nick is such a good visual storyteller and so imaginative. So they kind of got on the same page, and then he writes outlines of what happens in every issue. Marvel style, which is the way they used to make comics, and then Nick breaks it down and then starts drawing it, and Hickman writes it, the dialogue over it. I mean, it's definitely the book has two voices mixed into one, which, you know, a lot of his books do, but in terms of the writing, the storytelling is largely Nick's influence helps it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great collaboration, and I'm glad it's still going. How so that was your experience with Hickman. How would you contrast that with your experience with I think it's Mike Costa from Smoke and Mirrors?
Yeah.
Was it sort of a similar collaborative thing, or was he more full script and you kind of came in and interpreted it?
Well, Mike and I grew up together.
Oh, okay.
So that was, you know, he's my best friend. He, you know, he officiated my wedding. you know, so, you know, it was like kind of our dream. I mean, we grew up making comics. Yeah, we were making comics together in high school. So with Smoke and Mirrors, it was kind of like a dream come true. But unfortunately, it was, you know, a property that didn't really play to my strengths. There was a lot of talking, a lot of sleight of hand magic, which I didn't know anything about. So it was kind of – it was heavily referenced. And but, yeah, Mike was writing full scripts on that. But, you know, we were talking about it a lot, you know, and I kind of did my own thing. On it, but yeah, every collaboration I've had has been different. You know, the way that writers write is consistently, you know, inconsistent. You know, like there's always some other, you know, opportunity. Some writers will write a bunch of details for a scene. Others will write, here's, you know, we're inside this room, make it fun or something, and then you kind of have to like, you know, use your imagination to really bring it along. Other writers I've worked with will include like hyperlinks in the script to actual photo reference of what they're talking about, you know, to get it more exact to what they want. So yeah, it's a very interesting thing. I think because I am sort of a writer myself, the Hickman approach worked best for me because I was able to put more of myself into it.
Right.
Because I, you know, I pride myself on my storytelling and my level of communication through my art.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't really draw in this awesome way that, you know, everyone wants me to do their covers or pinups and, you know, everything's super badass or whatever. You know, like I kind of draw in a way where I'm more concerned with the communication of it. You know, be it funny, be it scary, be, you know, so I think. You know, when I get a job like Manhattan Projects, it plays my strengths of a storyteller and, you know, invention, which is, you know, all that's what God Hates Astronauts is for me. It's, you know, like I don't write scripts at all for myself. It's extremely loose. I mean, it's constantly changing. You know, that's kind of, again, it's like, you know, my history with working on Blast Furnace. Yeah, I'm good at improv and improvisation. And that's kind of, you know, my wheelhouse.
Yeah, you can definitely feel that in Blast Furnace. But God Hates Astronauts, I've sampled the first issue. I've tried to, you know, immerse myself in a fairly quick manner. And even then, like what I also love about your stuff is like you'll go back. And I just earlier today, I reread the God Hates Astronauts trade that I got from your Kickstarter. And I was like, wow, I completely missed, I forgot what it was now. Something to do with the Bears, I'm sure, because I do tend to fixate.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, so, yeah, you know, so much so that I actually am staring at one of those, one of the pages from that, I bought off you with the Mystic Bear Tribe.
Oh, and, yeah.
John L. Sullivan, the, fisticuffs, boxer, old timey boxer guy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So I do like that your storytelling, the jokes are visual and then you'll add an extra layer of the story with the prose or with the words or even word effects sometimes that are ridiculous, but I mean, just hilarious, you know. Prague was one that stood out to me earlier. I'm like, wait, what? I mean, it's just so random and yet, like, that's why I think your stuff is so unique in such a great way in a lot of comics, because you just don't find that level of zany humor. I mean, there are other people out there doing their own version of zany, but, you know, yours actually, I think, succeeds at being funny, whereas sometimes it's just so out there you just don't even – you don't even know what to think. You're just like, oh, well, that's weird. But your stuff isn't weird because, you know, it's all familiar. Like, you've got tropes from superheroes. You've got, you know, old-timey boxers. You've got anthropomorphic, you know, animal creatures. You've got astronauts, which, by the way, that was something I was kind of worried. I mean, I'm not worried. I was wondering. After reading the original trade, I think the only time that astronauts are referenced is in that one – fleeting moment where they're like, oh yeah, we're the super team. what the five.
The Power Person's Five?
Yes, yes. And they're talking like, oh, yeah, we should stop that astronauts' rebellion. And yeah. It's just completely moved on, like, eh, whatever. So I'm glad to see in issue one, you've got astronauts. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's what it's about now. It's actually, you know, the whole idea, like, I thought about it for months and months on what I would do next. And the first volume was done in such a haphazard way. You know, I was really thinking about three or four pages ahead at any given point, you know, and like that's about it. So with the new series, I thought, like, all right, I need a real plot here. If this is going to be an ongoing series and, you know, like I need to actually have things happen that, you know, follow a progression so that people have, you know, like a motivation. And their motivation leads their character to somewhere. And so then that advances the story. Whereas before, the story was being advanced because I wanted to come to stupid references or funny jokes or new characters that I wanted to draw. So it's a little bit different. Pacing is a little bit different of a type of story with a new one. And I knew that I had kind of laid the seeds for this whole intergalactic thing in the first volume, just through like the, you know, the D story of the series, you know, that didn't really matter. And so now I'm really focusing on that with the new series. So it's taken a lot more, coordination and forward thinking and ability as a writer to pull it all together. But so far, so good.
Yeah, because in that first trade, the story really is about Starfighter. Like, it's his mm-hmm. journey. It's and he actually, I feel like in that first trade, like that is a consistent transformative, I mean, in many ways, experience for him, both physically and sort of emotionally, yeah. You know, and that is all prelude to what happens in issue one. And sets all that up is really kind of cool. So I hope, you know, obviously we all hope that when people read issue one and they go, well, who the hell, what's this guy's deal? Like, you've got that OGN still, like, I'm sure you've still got a couple copies left,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, that people can easily go out and dig in the backstory of all of these characters. And like issue one, I believe you've got some of the side characters coming back and playing a more prominent roles. My favorite, of course, and I know he's dear to you too, is Gnarled Wilson, or Winslow. Yeah. I don't keep on saying Wilson. So if you haven't seen Gnarled Winslow, he's based off of a real person, right?
Well, he's based slightly. I mean, he's based most off Bunk from The Wire.
Okay.
But in personality, but visually he's kind of a mix of several Reginald Bell Johnson roles,
yes,
from Family Matters and Die Hard.
Yep. I was thinking of Die Hard, definitely.
Yeah, it's more Die Hard, but I write him as if he was Bunk Moreland from The Wire. So he's kind of can be the voice of reason at time in the series, but he also has his own weaknesses. But yeah, he's a really interesting character for me to write. Like because he's the only one that isn't, for the most part, that isn't acting irrationally and running around and swearing and being totally self-centered, you know. And
yeah.
So trying to figure out what his course is, and you know, like I had to, when I did the first volume, I didn't think at all about who these characters really were. They were just jokes, and so for the new series, I had to figure out who the hell they were and, you know, what they wanted and why they were doing what they were doing. And even when I'm, you know, writing the pages, I start thinking about it more and developing them further. You know, so like I'm trying to like build some depth into this and not lose the humor. And so far it's working. You know, people who've read it think it's pretty funny still. But, you know, like it's got to hold together more than just, you know, funny sound effects and animals punching other animals, you know, like it's got to be more than that because it's got to, you know, I want it to go on for a while.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I still don't know where it's going to go. I have a rough idea through 10 issues. And then it will just, as I'm making it, hopefully the ideas will kind of roll off of the ideas.
Yeah.
Cause I tried to make this universe where basically anything can happen. You know, like the new series, I have a narrator called 3D Cowboy.
Love it.
Which he's actually in 3D. So if you put 3D glasses on, he pops off the page. But he's the only thing that pops off the page.
That's great.
So having that kind of thing, I'm starting to set this precedent that this is a comic book and there are things that I can do because it's a comic book. So, I have like a fake advertisements in issue 2 and those continue in 3. And, the ideas that I'm having, I feel like it's going to get more and more ridiculous and outrageous as it goes on. Because I just kind of pushing, you know, I'm just going to take baby steps to see what people will tolerate from what I'm doing.
Now, so you've created already a rich, fertile world for this kind of imaginative, just, you know, like you said, whatever can happen, it probably will or whatever. Would you bring in maybe somebody or other characters or the main character even from Blast Furnace as a way of sort of reintroducing them to these new fans so that maybe down the road that could lead to something? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I've always maintained it's the same universe. I mean, it's very clearly the same universe. Same types of characters exist. I mean, the big difference is Blast Furnace doesn't have any like superhero types. I think this slowly will kind of blend together, because, you know, in my lifetime, I only have so many jokes. So eventually it'll start combining. So I don't have to like pick and choose where I use them. But we will see. It might be kind of a slow build. I've been working on Blast Furnace 2. But I had to stop because Guardians Astronauts is too demanding. But I've got another 2.5 chapters.
Sweet.
Blast Furnace done.
So one of my friends, like I said, who I gave that book to, he actually had a question for you. And it's one of those like fan questions that are just kind of funny and ridiculous at the same time.
Okay.
He's like, how does he get those ties that catch fire? Is that like a thing that he makes? Is it a thing he purchases? Is it just an effect of his aura? What's the explanation for this man's burning tie?
We see him light his own tie on fire in like issue 5 of the first. So we know that he's lighting his own tie on fire.
But they have like a preternaturally
long-lived. Yeah, they stay lit. And some of that I'm actually like starting to figure out in my head. And so I can't really talk about it.
Oh, sure.
But I'm working out explanations for a lot of that stuff.
That's great. Because, that's what's funny is you have these weirdo ideas and then they sound great. They look great. And then later, like you said, you go back and go, okay, now what is this? How did we get to this point? You know, what is this guy's deal? And that's a great way to work, I think. I mean, it's far more imaginative to do it that way than like to, you know, sit there and sort of plot the world you're building from like, you know, way back, which is also a valid, you know, world building technique.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Hickman or Rucka and that's what they do. You know, they have notebooks upon notebooks of this world that these things then emerge from. And, you know, those are just amazingly like complex and realistic and all that. But it's also nice to have that kind of zany cartoon, like you said, Ninja Turtles, you know, just weirdo random things that you know have no basis in reality but are so much more fun because of that, you know.
I play off of my strength of being able to come up with stuff, you know, and I've yet to paint myself into a corner. I'm sure it will happen at some point where I'll have to get someone else involved to help me try and dissect where this needs to go. But I feel like the sense of humor that I'm building, within these books is so much me, you know, it's so much what I think is funny.
Right.
And it's very, very genuine. Like I feel like a lot of stuff that's intentionally like silly and ridiculous is kind of someone sitting around saying what's the most ridiculous thing I can come up with. Whereas I try to come up with something that has a logic to it. At least, you know, within this world,
right?
And or something that really makes me laugh a lot. A lot of it comes from references, and most of the references are from movies. So there's a lot of like movie references that like really play into the humor of this. Where I'm just doing this scene from this movie, whether or not it's obvious.
I think my favorite one of those that I noticed in the original graphic novel for God Hates Astronauts is when the Impossible gets killed and is laying there. And if you haven't read this, the Impossible is this kind of weird sort of superhero, but with like a cape. So, but then the mask, this just creepy elongated mask that's then turned 180 degrees upside down so that the eyes are kind of at the bottom. And so this character gets killed, and then the mask, he's laying there, and then the mask blows up, and you see the face of the person who just killed him, Starfighter. Like, that was a straight up Empire, that, what did they call that cave? Yeah, I mean, that was straight up that, and I just laughed because I'm like, I hadn't thought about that scene in a while. And so, you know, that's cool too. I think that it's good to speak the language of the culture and reference those kind of things, even if it's just for a joke, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. I mean, sometimes it's cheap, but I feel like it feels less cheap if I'm enjoying it as much as I want the reader to. So that's, you know, that's kind of the thing with book. Like, you know, I'm really, another thing I do frequently is I don't outright tell jokes. Like, within the God Hates Astronauts world, there's no funny person. Like, they're all very serious at all times. Right. And all the situations are extremely serious. You know, which is something that happens a lot. And especially, like, Adult Swim. You know, a lot of Adult Swim shows, like, you know, Space Ghost, you know, Coast to Coast and Aqua Teen Hunger Force and some shows like that that really build on this sense of humor that everything is desperately serious and very high stakes and very high tension, and yet it's everything that's happening is totally unbelievable and stupid, you know, and that's kind of like an automatic sense that automatically makes it fun for me, at least.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I hadn't even thought about that connection, but some of that early Adult Swim stuff, and I'm sure even the current stuff, but yeah, I haven't kept up as much, but definitely the old Space Ghost, Aqua Teen, and gosh, even like what's one of the other ones? Frisky Dingo comes to mind a little bit, because again, like you said, the characters aren't telling jokes; they're doing their things because they have motivations to do this, that, or the other. And even if it's like a terrible thing, like, you know, the main guy in Frisky Dingo, Killface, you know, killing somebody randomly, like, it's still hilarious because it's kind of random the way he did it, or, you know, some kind of a like side effect of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So sure. Like, that makes it, again, that kind of makes it dynamic, and it also makes it sometimes really unpredictable, which, you know, again, in this age where a lot of the big studio comic publications, maybe less so with Marvel and more so with DC, they are a little by the numbers sometimes, and you go, okay, I know how this story is going to go. It's going to do this and do that. But with something like God Hates Astronauts, especially some of the other Image stuff like Prophet and certainly Manhattan Projects, it's just so much more looser in form, you know? Yeah. So I think that gives you just like, I mean, like you're saying, it gives you a lot of options, but it can also probably be overwhelming too. Sometimes like, okay, now where do we go from here?
Yeah.
But that's part of the fun, I think. And I know many of the people who I know personally and people who we know like kind of our sensibilities and like are some children of the 90s, some children of the 2000s who have those kind of media reference backgrounds will definitely love God Hates Astronauts.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing the way that everything has gone in the industry, you know, because Marvel and DC can't really take too many risks with the type of content they're putting out because so much of the fan base has gotten so opposed to new things. You know, there's such a strong history in comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll find the same thing in, you know, anything that has a strong history and a strong family. So you see that in sports, you know, people don't want rule changes, you know, like, or, you know, like people don't like change. They like things that are familiar.
Yep.
When they're really invested in them.
I mean, look at the outcry about Thor being a woman Captain America being black. It's like, these are not new concepts. Thor has been an alien before, and there's been a black Captain America and a, you know, other Captain America. It's like, this is nothing new, but people still lose their shit about it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And it's, you know, it's not really the company's fault. And, you know, I don't know whose fault it is. It's just kind of the the culture of superhero, mainstream superhero comics is kind of built this way.
Right.
And so that's why Image and Dark Horse and Oni can find this audience where people are like, hey, this is really refreshing. Look at how weird this is, or how fun this is, or look at this great idea.
Yep.
You know, and people don't have a preconceived notion of how it's supposed to go, and a certain expectation that the characters are going to behave a certain way because they don't know the characters.
Yeah.
And that gives a certain level of freedom to the people that are making those books. Whereas people working for creating characters that have been around for 60 years, 70 years, you know, like, there's not much wiggle room with what you can do with them because mm-hmm. people are going to cite precedent. This character doesn't ever do this. This character never did this. But, you know, if that character was still alive, they'd be 120 years old. Like, it doesn't, you know, like, So I don't know. Like, the older I get, the less of a desire I had to ever work for Marvel or DC.
Now, you have done some Marvel work. I remember you have the story with Charles Soule, I believe,
mm-hmm.
in one of the original Sins, which is the tie-in book. I mean, it really is nothing to do with Original Sin much more than the fact that I guess it you know, reveals some kind of a Original Sin involving the Inhumans, but it definitely ties into what he's doing with his Inhumans book. Are you in talks? Are you doing any more Marvel stuff or?
No, you know, I'm not actively seeking anything out because the writing and drawing the ongoing God Hates Astronauts is what I want to do, and it's way too much work to begin with. I'm doing a short thing for DC for Charles right now.
Cool.
That I don't know when it will be coming out, but so like all of a sudden I have two short stories with Charles, with Marvel, and then one with DC. That's kind of like I can check that off my bucket list of, you know, I work for the big two.
Yeah.
You know, so all my business cards will say Marvel DC artist Ryan Brown. you know, but yeah, no, that's all Charles. You know, Charles and I have been friends for many years, and you know, he has had certain ideas that he knows would work for me, and he's basically gotten me the job, those jobs when I wasn't even looking for them. But they're really a thrilling, you know, thing to experience that.
Yeah, I did like that short because it played off of your love of Strange Anatomy. what was the? It's not Legion. What was the character's name?
His name is Lineage.
Lineage, right? So he is an Inhuman who, you know, pretty much anybody in his bloodline, as they die, they like become part of him and they manifest as like some part on his body. I guess they're like mostly faces.
Yeah.
And it definitely was right up your style because like you have like the anti-mugger, you know, who's got that third fist coming out of him and got his astronauts and like all the crazy. Oh, we didn't even mention that Gnarls Winslow in the original graphic novel had these giant ape arms, but they unfortunately, spoiler, got ripped off. So now he's replacing those with like these nice metallic sort of like cyborg implants, which is a nice development. I mean, obviously the guy needs some arms, but
He works for NASA now. He didn't work for NASA in the first series, and so now he has some money. Before he was a Chicago cop, but
a good government, that good space program money that there's so much of, right?
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
That's right.
Well, I do love that the NASA's in there. I mean, it's totally a random thing, but it's like, you know, NASA in your world has so much more power and so much more influence, and And yet it just makes sense. You're like, oh, well, yeah, we represent NASA. We're a super team, superhero team that also just we're sponsored by NASA. Like it totally, It makes sense in a bizarre way. So I love it.
As long as it makes some sort of sense.
Yeah.
Then I'm all for it.
Yeah. It has to have that, like, just incredulous, like, really? That's what you're doing? Like, I will admit, like, the first issue, again, not to spoil too much, because I know everybody's going to go out and read it, but there is some interesting interactions with animals that I certainly was a little like, oh, we're going here, huh? Okay. And I love it because they're these astronauts, but they're farmers. And they, you know, the one guy falls in love with a chicken.
Uh-huh.
It's just like it's going down this path, and then it takes a swerve, and of course, then becomes even more ridiculous. Kind of like when Starfighter gets his new horse buddy to merge with him inexplicably to give him a head after he had his giant head deflated. No, I'm also really excited about, you know, the family dynamic in the Starfighter and was it Starrier?
Yeah. His wife? Uh-huh.
And then what's the baby called?
Starlina. Yeah. It's supposed to be dumb, and it is, you know.
But it's cute because, you know, and this is where, you know, obviously I would not say that Goddess Astronauts is something you would hand like a young kid. But mm-hmm. I think that there is a certain age where it may be high schoolish or middle school that'll really get a kick out of this kind of stuff. I mean, as random as stuff like Adventure Time is, you know, this is that just, you know, in a more, I don't know, I wouldn't say comic book way, but in a more definitely animal associated way.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people who do like that sense of humor will definitely find stuff here. But yeah, the chicken thing was like a little, all right, chicken. I don't. Yeah, like we're not a family friendly podcast or anything. But I'm like, just can't bring myself to say the words chicken fucker. Okay, I said it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't see it happen.
No, that's true.
It's referred to. You know?
Now, was there a subtle reference to Sam Humphrey's "Our Love Is Real" in that?
You know, I never read that.
Well, you said something in the dialogue that said something about. I think it was the farmer or at the. Farmer astronaut guy is like saying something about because they're gonna take his chicken love interest away, and he's like, "Our love is real," or something like, "Our love is true," or something like that, and it just reminded me of that ridiculously outrageous Sam Humphrey's indie, where basically, you know, people are starting to have, you know, sex with animals because it's safe, you know.
Yeah.
So
well, I mean, it wasn't intentional, but it is. I will say the one thing that I think saves this little. Three-page love story at the beginning of this issue is that the chicken is also in love with him.
Oh, yeah. So, you did draw that, and you conveyed that very well. I mean, it was not Henrietta. It's Hennifer.
Hennifer.
Yes. That's great. So, I mean, this is – I'm so excited for you. I really think that this could be really cool, and I'm thrilled to know that you've got it thought out. You know, and far enough without getting too overplanned, and like I'm really excited about how other people respond to this. I'm sure you are.
I'm actually terrified.
Well, that's a kind of excitement, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
No, and I will say this: like your art too. Like going back and rereading the original OGN and Blast Furnace, and seeing some of your early stuff, Smoke and Mirrors. Is, you know, like you can tell you have grown so much through doing all that work. That what I've seen of the ongoing now, it just looks great.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. It, hopefully I just keep progressing in one way or the other, you know, because I haven't really plateaued, which I think is a really good thing. And so I hope I don't plateau with my skill set for many years to come.
Yeah. And so you guys who are listening, please – double check that your store is going to get it because, you know, with any image book, number one, you know, a lot of stores like the number ones, I guess, but really it's like the number twos and threes, I guess, that they're sort of they don't order as much of those. You know, you have that whole.
Yeah, stigma. It can drop off pretty big.
So, you know, if you're interested in what we're hearing about, if you go online and check out the original graphic novel, start telling your store to make sure they have issues like two and on because one will be great. And, everyone's going to want to keep up with the crazy mixed up adventures of of NASA, Starfighter, all the great characters in there. God, keep you doing that for a while. That's going to be so cool.
I hope so. I hope if I can get three more trades out of it before I go broke, that would be awesome. That's my new goal.
Well, hey, you know, you could do a lot worse, you know?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was good we finally got to do this.
Yep, amen. All right, take care, man.
You too.
All right, so that was Brian interviewing Ryan Brown. Next up, during Orlando Nerd Fest, Brian had the chance to sit down with Stephanie Messenger, or Steffo, of my parents' favorite music. If you think being a chip hop or nerd music artist is tough, try being transgendered and doing this. Well, that's the road that's being paved by Steffo. So here we go, Brian and Steffo.
I'm Brian with Flame On. I'm here with my parents' favorite music.
That's me!
That is Stephanie. Steffo, I guess, sort of still people might know you from both. I don't know. Messenger.
Steffo is still short for Stephanie.
Okay.
It works.
Oh, good. And two other musicians, and I'll let them introduce themselves because I have a bad short-term memory.
My name is Steven, and I'm filling in for bass when she comes down here in Orlando. And, yeah, play bass.
Great.
And I'm Matt, or MC. I still play drums sometimes.
All the times.
Very cool. Well, I really appreciate it. Stephanie and I have been trying to get an interview together for a while. And you're out of Michigan, right?
I am.
So, you know, technology is great, but sometimes it just doesn't quite work out. And we haven't had a chance. But now we're down here at Orlando Nerd Fest in Orlando, Florida, of course. So, so glad to have you on. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, you're welcome.
I mean, this is... let's dive right into it. So this is part of our GLBTSTUV XYZ. musician series. And... I first found out about Stephanie and her music actually a year ago. Nerdapalooza 2013. May they rest in peace. I went and saw a couple bands that I wanted to check out, and I talked to our friend, our mutual friend, Mark Sidorius from Mark with a C, Mark with a C.
Mr. C, I like to call him.
Ooh,
I never call him that.
And Mark, as soon as I get there and I say hi to Mark, he's like, "You've got to go check out this band. Oh, my God. You've got to go see it. You've got to go see it." I'm like, all right. I just got to Nerdapalooza that day. And so I rushed in there, and I sat through the set, and I loved it. It was great. And then I went to the merch booth, and you were, I think, off doing something else. But I talked to whoever was working the merch booth, and I don't remember. And I looked down, and I'm like, oh, my God, there's a rainbow what are those little bead things called?
Bead Sprites.
It was a rainbow... I guess your band's logo. It's like a little smiley face or googly eye.
Yeah.
She's going to go dig one out.
I'm going to show you.
So, of course I'm interested, and I'm like, there it is. And it's sitting, same thing is sitting up on my fridge to this day.
Yay.
And I'm like, what is the deal with this? Who is this person? I got to know more. And so then we started talking on Facebook, and you know, now we're finally meeting, so this is awesome. So, my parents' favorite music... Nerdcore, nerd rock, geek rock. I mean, there's all kinds of labels we all throw around. What do you consider it?
I consider it just plain fun. That's what I try to tell people. Like, when they tell me, I say, of course, first thing is my parents' favorite music, but I like to say if you have to put a label on it, I'm starting a new thing, and it's going to be called Just Plain Fun. It will catch on like wildfire in an iceberg. But I consider it kind of chip hop, I guess. People in the nerdcore community have taken me in, and I've welcomed it, but I've never really considered myself nerdcore.
Okay.
I've considered everything nerdcore or everything
There's some elements
chip-tune.
Of nerdcore in there.
There are.
Which is why people tend to
be
drawn
to it.
It's
an amalgam of different concepts, but really chip-hop, I guess, would be the best use to describe it.
Which is perfect to me because I'm a musician, and I love chip-tunes. But the hip-hop thing has never been as big for me. But your music's nice because it's hip-hop, but with chiptunes. So I love that. That makes so much sense.
I always get a lot of people that are like, I don't like rap, but I like you. And I'm like, then you like rap.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And then really it's getting different. It's getting more diverse, certainly. But,
right.
Now, you started this band, I believe, in like 2000?
Correct, sir.
And you...
been doing your homework.
I maybe a little bit over a few drinks.
Yay.
No, and I mean, that's impressive because, I mean, 14 years doing this on again, off again, like just making this is your thing, like that's amazing to me because so many musicians will crash and burn and fade out and you'll never hear from them again after they've had like a, you know, one or two hits. But you've had, what, four albums?
Five now.
Five?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a really big achievement.
Thank you.
Now, do you want to talk about, like, why did you start this? Was there some kind of, like, a thing that sort of caused you to say, I want to start a band?
Growing up, I played video games, and I always thought they needed, like, video game music didn't have any vocals to it. And that bothered me. I grew up with, and it really was my parents' favorite music, I grew up with stuff on the radio, like oldies. And then I had my older brothers that were about 8 and 10 years older than me. They listened to a lot of heavy metal in the 80s. And then I myself liked the stuff in between, like the disco and the 90s hip-hop that they didn't really care for. So it was a big culmination of stuff. And because of that, I wanted to make something that I liked on the radio because there wasn't a lot of stuff that I enjoyed. So I just said, screw it. You know, I'm going to try taking the video game music and just putting my own stuff to it. And honestly, it was just a hobby at first. I started as a Bloodhound Gang cover band.
Oh, my gosh.
It was horrible.
Well, cover bands are their own unique place in hell. But you know, I've been in a cover band, so I can say this.
We have we all.
Yeah. But, you know, you learn a lot. I really do feel like it's a good place to start a musician. Bloodhound Gang, though, a particular one, since they had, you know, a few albums, not too many to choose from, I guess, but so you're my parents' favorite music, that did originate from sort of the music that you knew your parents loved and they instilled in you over...
Yeah, well, what ended up happening when I first started, it was a high school battle of the bands, and I couldn't come up with a name, and I didn't care, but I was like 17, I was like, I'll call it This Band Sucks, and my mom's like... That's stupid. And I'm like, all right, I'll call it My Parents' Favorite Music. And she's like, I like that better. And I'm like, all right, whatever. So 15 years later, it's stuck.
But you hear so many stories about band names, it's always like that. The good ones at last are always like, oh, well, somebody just suggested such and such, and it's
stuck.
Sup,
Corn.
Yeah. Corn. Actually, Huey Lewis in the News. It was originally Huey Lewis and the All-Americans or something. And then one of the producers was like, just call yourself Huey Lewis in the News, and it stuck. And it's the thing everybody knows it as. So that was high school, and you had a partner, too, that you were working with, correct?
Yeah, I've gone through a few different partners.
Okay.
And it's just, essentially, MPFM has always been what I consider open source, where, like, if somebody wants to be part of the magic, it's I guess it's just an auditionary process, and I let them see if they enjoy it and if they want to actually pursue it with me. And it's my baby, you know? And it's like, so I say, hey, if you can do it with me, and we'll mesh things together.
Had you been in, like, high school band, like, music otherwise?
I did. Like, when I was in middle school and high school, I played in bands, and I learned the basics. And, you know, thank God I did, because it really did help me to this day. And I actually was just telling somebody about it. Oh, if I didn't have that stuff, I might not have been a musician. Because I learned about measures, I learned about timing and breaks and, you know, the simple stuff, the foundation. So, yeah, I mean, if it wasn't for that kind of stuff, I don't know if I would have been doing this now.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly helps, you know, depending on who you're playing with, if they're legit or if they just play or whatever. And, you know, some people know how to read music, some don't, but it's like a nice foundation, right? You can speak the language. Now, chiptunes is cool because, like, I think when you started, really, there wasn't a whole lot to go on with chiptunes. Like, you pretty much had to sample your own stuff.
When I first started, there were only two inspirations, besides the stuff, like, that the suburban white kids listened to. Like, I'll admit, like, it was like the Insane Clown Posse's and the Cottonmouth Kings, and I was like the only person that didn't smoke weed that listened to them. I felt so out of place.
Right.
And that's the thing, I listened to all of these bands that, like, I didn't relate to, but it was the closest thing. So, and that's why I started making my own stuff. But when it started becoming geekier, like I heard MC Chris for the first time, and that helped. I heard many bosses for this first time, and it blew my mind. Mm-hmm. But I thought I could make something my own, and but mesh it well. Like I would take many bosses songs and rap over them. That's how I started.
Oh wow, yep. Okay, that's a great way. I mean, because so many, I know I'm a technical guy too, and it's like you get lost in the minutia of making chiptunes. But why not sample and then build from there?
It's perfect because they have such passion in themselves. And what I do just needs something like that. It's a perfect mix.
And you mentioned you collaborate with a lot of people. I know you collaborated with MC Shy Guy. I know he was on not two albums ago? Or is he been on
the last album I came out with, Win-Win. I was one of the main LPs. And he did the intro track for it.
Yeah, which if you have a chance, I really recommend that one as I think a starter track, just because it's a good representation of your sound, and it's a well written song. I mean, it's a lot of fun.
Thank you.
And then let's see, who else have you? You said you collaborated with MC. Have you collaborated with MC Chris or just?
He did an introduction track for the album previous to that.
Okay. And then YT Cracker, I believe?
We've done things together. And there's MC Lars, Brendel Floss. I mean, and live shows is crazy.
That's right. Yeah, that's when I saw you. You have the thing where there's the extra, and I apologize, the song name escapes me, but The Extra Life. And it's Brendel Floss and comes out and does the Extra Life.
That's
the
self-titled track, Win-Win.
Yes, yeah, that is, I saw that live, and I actually had wanted to see Brendel Floss, and so that was that was really cool that he did that. So overall, your sort of trajectory as a musician, you play a lot of nerd music festivals, of course, like this. Have you found it kind of a, I don't know, do you enjoy doing just that, or do you do other gigs, or how do you kind of...
I enjoy this more, yeah. But I do... What I do is very specific and can't... I try to play venue shows locally or even in other areas if I'm in an area, but it doesn't pan out too well.
We didn't do the con circuit until we got together, actually.
2011. Okay. I didn't play conventions until I met MC, and then being the businessman he started, mass emailing every single convention, and then we started touring conventions at that point, and we built up a repertoire.
Yeah, yeah, to be honest, it was like, you know, I've played in a lot of different genres. It's easy for drummers to kind of band hop, you know what I mean? So doing that, and then I saw this niche, and I was like, oh, man, this is actually really good.
When we first met each other, he was like, hey, I want to play my whole iPod full of just NES tracks, nothing else. And he played me some Wizards and Warriors. Oh, and it was a sample I had already used for a song. So, and we met each other, at his place. And I played all of the previous MPFM songs I had already done. And he played drums to it. And it was like another chapter. It just worked perfectly.
Yeah. I love how that stuff layers. Because chiptunes by itself can be so minimal. Mm-hmm. But, what's the group? They're out of New York. They did the Scott Dove. Yeah, Anamanaguchi.
Yeah.
And I'd only heard their chiptunes, and I heard them live when they played Orlando, and they layered on the drums and everything else.
We actually got to play with them in Knoxville.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah, it was
fantastic,
really great.
Guys.
Awesome guys. Great guys.
We used their samples for a song, and we're like, hey, can we use your samples? And they're like, dude, go ahead. It's fantastic. Please.
And I'm really impressed, too, by the community's willingness to be so free and sharing and collaborating.
Right.
Because in other parts of the music industry, that's not as common. So the nerdcore scene is really now what you've found to be the most successful and certainly the most where you can be yourself.
Exactly. I mean, successful is it's a good term, but I would say more loving.
Loving.
Because, honestly, I can't say I'm completely successful. I mean, it's popular, but at the same time, it's like we really do it for the camaraderie.
Yeah. The money isn't quite there. It's like the...
We always say, one more year.
Well, it's the Amanda Palmer thing, too, because I know one of the things that you do is when you're going to play an area and come down, you say, hey, guys, hey, Facebook, who's got a couch? And Amanda Palmer is very famous for couch surfing, and using that as a chance not only to find places to stay and sort of help subsidize the cost of touring, but also meet her fan base. And again, you in particular, but also the community seems very good about engaging the fan base fan base.
Absolutely,
that's most important.
Yeah, no, I mean, so it makes up for a little bit of the money not being
absolutely.
There.
I mean, with what we do, like, yeah, we don't make much money in what we do, but we know that what we're actually writing about is down to earth, and it actually isn't. It's just not money, you know.
Yeah.
And blah, blah, blah. I don't want to say, I don't know if I can swear.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Bitches, hoes. So it's things like that. And, of course, that's the slippery slope argument about, you know, mainstream rap versus what we do and things like that. But all the people here, I mean, they're living their lives and they're just trying to make ends meet. And this is just, it's a getaway, and it's a nice getaway. And now it's becoming something other than just a little get together with friends. It's not just family. It's like there are people bringing little kids here now, and I have to watch my swears. But it's all right, because I still, like, we were in the elevator last night, and there were a bunch of people, and there was this little kid that, like, he left his dad in the elevator to just jump around for a second. He was playing crisscross, and he ended up going to the other elevator with all of us rappers.
Oh, no.
And he got lost. He got lost with a capital L. It was like, see the logo. Anyway, so he gets in the elevator with us, and he's in the corner. And, like, I can't get in the corner right now, but, like, he's in the corner just, like, he's looking at everybody, but not looking. And then, like, I look down at him, and I'm like, so you like rappers? And he's just, and then looks away. And then the elevator opens up, and he, like, squeezes through everybody and runs to his dad.
Oh.
So, and, like, experiences like that, like, now it's becoming for everybody. And, oh, granted, I scared children. But it's really nice to know.
You left a big impression on him, I'm sure.
Right.
I mean, no, and seriously, in those kind of sense, he might have been scared at the time, but he'll think back on that and go, wow, that was awesome.
Yeah, I threw a demo at him.
Did he catch it? It left a mark. Okay, so I want to dig into this, because one of the things that I've read about your career is you did start as a very, I will say, bearish young man.
Right.
And I don't know the timeline here. But now you carry yourself as a very nice, attractive woman. And so you
know how to make a girl blush.
No. Oh, well, you are very, so our mutual friend Kat Blackard from Nerdy Show likes to call it gender fluid. And he has certain elements of this that he expresses in his life as well. But in the community that we are a part of, the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transsexual, all that crap, where do you consider yourself? If you had to pick a category or two that you want to kind of sort of align with, what would you consider?
Steph-O.
Okay. No, and that's honestly, I love hearing that. Then, well, I'm actually a trans otter, bisexual, whatever, who likes,
well,
you know.
I've learned that, like, I mean, growing up, like, yeah, like you said, I was very bearish. Like, basically, that was my Camaro with the small penis kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. I was overcompensating, but I still liked color and fashion and stuff like that.
Right.
But I didn't think I could do it before I came out as trans. So when I came out, like, even as trans, I felt like I wasn't part of the binary, even. And it's nothing against anybody, but when you do that thing, some people just, like, they get into that mode where they feel like they have to be feminine or have to be masculine. And like you're talking about Cap, it's a gender fluid thing. Like, I remember hearing somewhere that somebody said that I wasn't trying hard enough to be feminine. And I just laugh at that. Like, you know what? Like, yeah, I sound like Barry White. Do I give a shit? No, I go into the men's bathroom, and some guy will give me a dirty look, and I'll be like, sup?
And that, to me, is amazing, because
you got to break stereotypes.
Exactly, and that's what's so cool about it, because we have so many of, you know, we do a lot of stuff with drag queens. We have a whole thing that Oral from a comic shop does called Drag Queen.
His name
Spandex.
Is Oral?
Oh, yes. Oral's fabulous. You would love Oral.
Would I?
You know, hey. It's a hard sell, let me tell you. So, we love you, Oral. But no, we have a lot of feminine queens that come on, but my favorite drag queens and my favorite individuals are the ones that say, you know what? I'm a boy in a dress. That's what I am. Whether it's recreational,
you know
whether
how hard it is to explain to people that I'm a tomboy because I have a dick? And they're like, you can't do that. And I'm like, I'm not listening to you.
Right.
Like,
no,
that's it.
And that's the best, because it's so easy to do the binary thing. But I think, like, one of my favorite drag queens is Milk. And she's one of these queens who has the stash. And that is, oh, and another
it's
one.
Like Conchita Wurst.
Yeah. And in fact, another one who's going to be there at Fergasm, like we were talking about, Beyonce, full beard.
I already like the name.
Full beard. Dragon.
Tell her
beard.
I said hello.
Berance is amazing. We actually, she was on our second episode of our Drag's New Spandex show. So I love that, and that's great. And I want you to, I mean, you own that, and I'm glad because.
I'm renting it.
Oh, you're renting? Okay, well, rent it. Lease it, at least. Because, no, that is really a powerful statement, and I want more people to be. I want them to be acclimated, but at the same time, you don't want them to be completely acclimated because there's power in it now. And if it's just common, then it's not as going to be as much powerful.
I'll put it this way. Someone came up to me at this particular convention and said, you know what? I really think that you had some kind of influence on the community because I'm seeing a lot more trans individuals here that are actually going to see your show in particular. And I think that it's just, it's open. Like when I do things like, and I just don't care. Like, to me, it was a big boundary to break for me, but now that I've done it, I'm just comfortable with it. But, like, now I'm realizing that there are other people that are, like, maybe sitting in the bedrooms or whatever, you know, either, A, listening to the music or just seeing the concert and stuff and realizing, hey, if she can do it, I can too.
That's great.
And that's what it's about. So I'm so happy to be a part of that.
That's, I mean, that really, it really does mean a lot because you're right. People just hanging out, their only connection is online. That's, then now at least there's that. Cause I mean, I'm old enough to remember there wasn't a lot of online when I was a kid. My only connection was
stickball.
Exactly. You know, we built sandcastles and played with our G.I. Joes. All right. But I mean, no, we had no community to identify
not
with.
At all.
We didn't know what the hell normal was except for what we saw on TV and what our parents did and all that. And to have this community now that's out there that we can reach out to. I mean, that's and have people like you and Cap and all these people who reject the gender binary. That's not right. The binariness of
the
gender.
The two-party system.
The two-party system. Thank you. That's much more succinct. I mean, that's, I think that's really important. So, what else is there? What's coming up? I know you're touring right now. I was here down in Orlando. What is next for your band?
Sleep.
Sleep.
There, I'm in talks with a couple people. I mean, I can't disclose too much. I am in talks of possibly touring soon.
Great.
I can't say it's national or international. Wink. But other than that, a lot of collabs, like always. Right now, I'm in the process of going back into the studio. If people don't know, MPFM has always been about a modus operandi that we're going to make 6 CDs total, LPs, that are part of a giant map.
Okay,
it's our collaborative effort.
And if you haven't seen the picture, think, I don't know, Mega Man? What was there's like a correlation, a visual correlation I remember.
I stole the sprites from Earthbound.
That is, okay.
But like it basically, but it's like a video game map and each CD is a level. And right now we're on level to, like, I released a bonus round, an EP, mm-hmm. and that was the last CD, but right now I'm in the process of working on level 3. And I don't know when that's going to be out, because I want to perfect it for you guys, and I still have a lot of collaborations and a lot of work to do. I'm working with a producer, his name is Too Mellow, he's out of Kentucky. He did the last album, okay. And he's fantastic at what he does. But right now I'm in the studio focusing on that, and possibly doing some touring in the next year.
Okay.
So, keep him busy.
That's it's all a musician can ask for, really, right? That's so great. And do you guys want to add anything? Obviously, you're local. You're the local, right?
Tell about your bands.
Yeah, I mean, please.
Oh, I'm in a band called Under Polaris.
Yay!
And it's a chiptune-inspired rock band where it's me, my fiancé, and a friend of mine. And we're very much kind of do what Sebo does in that we're very video game inspired.
Right.
We do video game covers, originals inspired by video games, and the chip element, if you will, is a synth that I've made that sound reminiscent of like 8-bit, 16-bit stuff.
What do you use for that?
Do all my writing on like online, so like Guitar Pro, and I make all my synths with like VSTs
okay.
that I find online. Though it's all software.
Okay.
Technical jargon.
Yeah. Oh. And yeah, just been doing that. And one of the things that kind of got it in motion was I went to Nerdapalooza in 2009. I've been going 2009 to 2013. Got to play 2013 with Under Polaris, and it was a kind of dream come true for me. But in 2009, one of the first bands I saw was My Parents' Favorite Music.
That's me.
And it was like early. There was a Friday. No, excuse me. Yeah, it was a Friday, right? It was a Thursday with pre-show.
You act like I don't drink.
Yeah, I want to say it was a Friday. It was like a Friday afternoon.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, probably like one or two acts before. And Steph-O comes out. And I was really unfamiliar with this entire scene.
Right.
All this, like, I knew some bands, I knew some acts.
But the scene itself.
But the scene itself,
yeah.
No idea.
Yep.
And Steph-O comes out and has a song. It's called Just a Game. And it begins with Navi from Ocarina of Time saying that, hey, listen. And I was sitting there with my buddy Rob, and we just looked at you and started laughing. Like, this is great. Someone knows this. Because we really didn't know, like, how big everything is.
Uh-huh.
And just hearing all the lyrics, and we're laughing, we're having fun watching. Like, this is great. And we just kept in contact ever since. And every time we played Nerdapalooza, like, we have to see Young Panda music. We have to see Young Panda music. We're never going to miss it. We never missed one of your sets.
And now it's come full circle because
yeah.
He's got his band under Polaris now. And I could, like, absolutely hate his band because I'll tell him. I'm a friend. I'll be like, if you're shit, I'll fucking tell you.
Right.
But, like, I like his band. And now I want to work with his band.
Cool.
And rap with his chiptune-esque stuff. And it's, like, it's come full circle, jerk.
Yeah.
Like, as I like
aww.
To say it.
Yeah, Steph-O.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Right.
Yes.
Steph-O was definitely a big help for that because, like, last year at Nerda, I did get to go on stage and play during a random music set. And it was one of those things where, like, after Nerdapalooza had ended and yada yada, I just sat there in bed and just kind of thought about everything at once. And it was one of those, like, 2009, saw it the first time, thought this was great. 2013, I'm friends with her. We're playing music together. And this big influence and really seeing, like, how great all this is and how inspiring it all is. Now I'm able to do what I can do.
No, and that's really, that.
Yeah,
I mean,
a big part of this.
There's the other thing about the community that is, there are a lot of musicians in the community,
mm-hmm.
which you know is a good sign.
Yes.
When it's just a genre that a lot of people like, but a lot of musicians go, oh, I don't know about that. But but in the nerd music scene, there's a lot of musicians that are fans, not just friends and,
mm-hmm.
you know, fans or, you know. So, I mean, it's really, it's a cool scene. MC, what are you doing? Besides my parents' favorite, is there anything exciting?
Yo, it's your turn.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking, man, I was definitely...
Playing a lot of drums?
No, unfortunately, no. I work for Hewlett-Packard. So.
Oh, you're a technical guy, too? Oh,
yeah,
that's a lot of that, too. So.
Yeah, that's what I do.
But so. Are you, like, weekend warrior? Do you play gigs...
I try to do what I can. I'm actually taking PTO to be down here, so I try to take.
Totally understand that.
Three, yeah, I get 3 weeks vacation here, so one's family, one's personal, and one's for touring. If
okay.
I can.
Appreciate
so,
that.
Yeah, I know. I try to do. I mean, you know, keep it open for like Magfest or Nerdapalooza or
the
well,
big guys.
Yeah,
right.
Of
the
course.
Big ones, whatever,
yeah.
whatever they are, and then some small ones in between, like maybe Daycon or some.
If
of those
we meet
ones.
Up in the middle, then we end
yeah,
up.
Yeah, yeah. If I can, it's tough though. I mean,
I totally
you know,
understand. I'm a full time IT guy.
Oh,
totally
yeah.
Understand.
Always on the clock, right?
Yep, yep.
9 to 5, what's that?
I know, right? No, and it's, again, it's funny because there's a lot of geeks in IT and there's a lot of musicians in IT,
yeah.
which is really interesting to see that crossover. So, well, that's I'm so thrilled that you guys are here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm really pleasantly surprised after the Nerdapalooza thing kind of fizzled out, Orlando Nerdfest seems to have carried the torch.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good bands here this weekend. If you didn't catch it, I don't know if there's going to be a next year. Honestly, I have no clue. I have no inside knowledge. Unlike Nerdapalooza, we don't know the people as well. But some of our friends are doing it, so we hope there will be another one. And certainly MAGFest is another big one. We have a lot of
yeah.
DC fans, and I go up there for work a lot. And MAGFest is on my list.
Oh, MAGFest.
I need to come check it out. I really have heard amazing things.
I've been there once.
That hotel is wild.
It's on the like
it
the bay or whatever.
Indoors.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
We were there with Shy Guy, and he's sitting there, and he saw the snow, and he looks at it, and he just screams into the mountains. He's like, it's January 3rd! Stop it!
Oh,
there was a comment I wanted to mention.
Please.
So, Steph and I don't really get to talk about it, but the biggest difference, because about you were mentioning, you know, nerdcore and how it relates and all that, and how we're different, and I was thinking about that question during the early part of the interview. I think some of the biggest difference, or some, one of the big biggest differences, is that in a lot of nerdcore and hip hop in general, it's I'm confident. It's about me, what I have, what I can do. You know, my crew, or you know what I've done, my experience, and that's cool. That's great. I like a lot of hip hop. You know, I'm a huge Tech N9ne fan. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I like that kind of aggressive, in your face stuff. But with Steph, it's like down to earth. Here, let's come and hang out together. I'm going to tell you a story.
It's vulnerable.
I'm gonna tell you a story. I'm going to have fun. I'm singing it with you. Come sing along with me. Do this thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like we're living this together, and I'm putting down on words and turn it into a song. You could write a song. We could sit down, go camping one night, sit down, have some great laughs. And then who writes a song about it but Steph, right?
Mm. Yay!
So that's the type of music.
I like to know that I actually have a special appeal. That's awesome.
And I think that's when Steph met, you know, Just Plain Fun. And, you know, you're like, well, some people might say, well, that's a cop-out. It's not really.
Oh, it's absolutely not.
People
take life too seriously.
You get the hip-hop feel, but you get the, you know, Just Plain Fun, that whole storytelling, just hang out with us, party with us, whatever.
The life's too short aspect.
Yeah, that's actually how I felt when I heard Just a Game. Because, like, the music, it's Rygar, right? It's Rygar. I'm like, this is awesome. It's Rygar. It's opening with Navi. And the lyrics, it's not
personal.
Just a video game, you know? These things.
Yeah, I'm not rapping about the video game I'm sampling, which is okay. I have friends that do that.
but the lyrics, everything's very relatable. It's great stuff and very down earth, and it's incredible.
Well, thank you guys so much for doing this. I really appreciate you guys taking the time. I know you were rehearsing. You got another gig on Monday,
Saturday.
I'm so thrilled. I'm going to actually get to hear you finally, it looks like, at the Kikeezy, because I didn't know you were playing that Saturday gig, and I'll be back from DC, so I'm so excited.
Whoa.
So, thank you guys so much, and what's the website for Facebook? Or
MyParentsFavoriteMusic.com, or Facebook/MyParentsFavoriteMusic, or anything. Just go to Google.com. I bought that website. And if you Google MyParentsFavoriteMusic.com, that's my website.
No wonder it came right up when I searched.
Right?
Let's see how that works. Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
All right. There we go. Another great set of interviews to cap out this microsode for you guys. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you check us out online, flameonshow.com, at flameonpodcast, and a variety of other ways to get in touch with us. We each have an email address, so feel free to send us emails, comment, or tweet at us. We'd love to hear from you. Flame on.
Thanks for listening to Flame On, a podcast made possible by Powder Milk Biscuits, the ones in the blue box, a comic shop, and the generous support of tops and bottoms like you. If you want to be one of our sugar daddies, you can help out by telling a cute single friend about us, reviewing us on iTunes, or putting some dollars down our digital G-string in our monthly support drive. For more ridiculously entertaining and socially enlightening episodes of Flame On, as well as other fine programs, head on over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to Flame On and all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via iTunes. And be sure to find us on Twitter at Flame On Podcast or Facebook on our Flame On fan page. And make sure to check out flameonshow.com for more nerdy queer in your ear.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.